If Only It Were Chadwick by Louis Buss. Louis Buss lives in London and is presently engaged in extensive research, both in England and abroad, into the life of Major A.W. Chadwick, Sadhu Arunachala. My grandmother's luck. Unlike my mother, grandmother, and assorted other female relatives, I have never been a great one for jumble sales. I could never see the fun of wandering around a noisy church hall, raking through piles of broken toys, old clothes, dog-eared paperbacks, and scratched records, only to come away after a couple of hours, clutching a cut glass vase and a bobble hat. If you ask me, this sort of thing is only one step above rummaging around in skips or combing through rubbish heaps. Mind you, I have to confess that those female relatives of mine did get some real bargains in their time, with my grandmother in particular making some marvelous finds. For similar reasons, I have always tried not to spend too much time on eBay, that virtual church hall where all the jumble of Western consumerism is washed up in a vast, perplexing pile. I always had a vague intuition that once I allowed myself to start poking around in there, I would get entangled in a strange twilight world of used car parts and football cards from which I might never battle my way back to normality. All the same, I have learned that for certain strictly regulated purposes, eBay does have its uses. And it was for one of these, though I forget the details now, that I made one of my rare visits to the site last October. When I had done whatever it was I had to do, I returned to the search box and, almost without noticing that I was doing it, typed in the word Ramana. And I sincerely hope that I took the trouble, out of respect for both grammar and guru, to use a capital letter at the start of his name. It was by no means the first time I had fed that name into eBay. In the past few years, my fingers have got into the habit of tapping that combination of keys in a sort of subconscious reflex, much as a love-struck teenager might absently trace her boyfriend's name on the cover of a book or the window of the school bus. I can certainly never pass a search box of any sort without entering his name, so I already knew from experience what happens when you search eBay for items matching Ramana. Having first checked that you didn't mean to search for Ramona, whatever that may be, this site will present you with a menu of familiar items, copies of talks, and Be As You Are, possibly with Who Am I, or Path of Self-Knowledge, adding a touch of variety to the list. I certainly didn't hope that anything of real interest might have washed up in the virtual church hall since I had last looked, and couldn't even have imagined what such an item might be. But on this one occasion, my grandmother's luck must have been with me, because I struck pure eBay gold. At the top of the list was a second edition of Self-Realization dating from 1935. Now, although it is not unusual to find some older editions of Ramana books on eBay, they tend to be from the 60s and 70s. This was something quite different, for this must presumably have been one of the very first publications ever brought out by Sri Ramanashramam, when Bhagavan was not only still alive, but still largely unknown in the wider world. This was less a book than a relic. The idle interest with which I had started the search instantly gave way to avid, apparent attention. The photograph accompanying the listing left no doubt that the book really was quite old and had lived rather a rough life. The cover might once have been white, but was now a sort of dirty gray with a hint of cream. Prominent among the various smudges was the outline of a coffee cup, a clear indication that this particular relic had not always been treated with the awe that it deserved. Otherwise, it was all very simple and plain, far more so than any modern publication. Just the title, Self-Realization, and in small lettering below, the words, Life and Teachings of Ramana Maharshi. The only decoration was further down, on the rim of the sacrilegious coffee cup ring, the shining old symbol of Sri Ramanashramam, exactly as we still see it on publications today. I suppose I must have stared at that picture in wonder for a few moments, amazed that I should have happened across such a treasure in that great virtual jumble sale. Then, eager for more details, I scrolled down the page to read the item description, and mere wonder soon gave way to a sort of tortured excitement. Unfortunately, the listing has been removed from eBay now, so I can't check exactly what it said. But here is a rough paraphrase of the description the seller had posted. This book was sent to England from Thiruvannamalai, South India, in August 1936. What makes it particularly interesting is the dedication from the sender on the opening page and the charming handwritten notes that accompany many of the illustrations. If my grandmother, wandering idly around some village hall on a rainy Saturday morning, had suddenly uncovered a Shakespeare folio or a Picasso sketch amongst the jumble, she could hardly have felt more excited than I did at that moment. For this book had actually been sent back to England from the ashram whilst Bhagavan was still alive. Furthermore, it must presumably have been sent by some English visitor or devotee at a time when he was virtually unknown in the West. I was instantly desperate to know who that mystery devotee might have been. Above all, I felt an almost maddening urgency to know the contents of those handwritten notes. It seems incredible to me now that I hesitated before clicking the Buy It Now button, but the asking price was £30, and I was not sure whether Bhagavan, with his famous frugality, would have approved of my spending such a princely sum on a rather tatty old book. But as the minutes passed, so my desperation to get my hands on the thing mounted. Looking back now, I realize that I would probably have been compelled to buy it if it had been priced at £300, let alone £30. So perhaps one could argue that it was more of a bargain than an extravagance. After all, who could ever really put a price on something so absolutely unique? Anyway, in due course, the inevitable happened. I went to bed a contented man. £30 poorer, perhaps, yet immeasurably richer. Only the following morning did the agony begin, as I woke up to the awful realization that I would have to endure the entire day without having the relic in my hands. Looking back at the listing, I found, to my horror, that the seller was proposing to send my treasure second class, which meant that it might take 5 or 6 working days to arrive. This was clearly not acceptable. By the end of the first hour, I was already drumming my fingers on the mantelpiece and knew that by the end of 6 working days, I would have drummed them to the knuckle. In my desperation, I even considered driving for hours to pick the book up in person, which would have cost me more in fuel Damn, I had paid for it in the first place. I resisted this madness, but wrote a desperate email to the seller, begging her to find some faster way to get the book to me. Eventually, after endless hours, or it may have been minutes of silence, she wrote back assuring me it would be in my hands by Saturday. Saturday morning saw me up early and mounting a watch on the garden gate. The postmen here in England have a special game they love to play, which involves creeping up to the front door in their socks and, whilst scrupulously avoiding all contact with bells and knockers, slipping a card through the letterbox saying how sorry they are to have missed you, because there was a parcel for you, but you will now have to wait 24 hours before you can pick it up. If they had played that trick on me now, it might have killed me. But fortunately, the postman arrived early that day and knocked in the traditional manner, and I was soon in possession of the fateful packet. Opening it was like opening a time capsule. The eBay photograph somehow hadn't prepared me for just how old this book really was. But now, as I finally held it in my hands, my overwhelming impression was of something that was not only somehow very Indian, but also very 1930s. The simplicity of the rough hardback cover and the style of the typeface were redolent of the Great Depression, of valve radios, propeller planes, and steamships. This was somehow a shock to me. For some years now, through books like Talks, Letters, and Day by Day, I have again and again visited the old hall in my imagination to sit by Bhagwan's sofa and listen to the devotees asking him questions, or to watch in awe as he sinks into silence whilst Madhavaswami shoos the monkeys away or fiddles with the radio. That place has been so much the focus of my attention that it has seemed, in a way, more real to me than this faintly implausible dream of mobile phones and satellite navigation. Only now, as I stared down at the book and saw just how old-fashioned it was, did I finally accept that those glorious days were half a century away, as distant as the age of steam, which, no matter how much certain romantics may long for it, can never come again. Whatever physical structures might remain, the old hall was gone, and the man who had once sat there in a loincloth was just another historical figure, a piece of public property like any other great man of the past, no more mine than Roosevelt or Churchill. But just as Bhagwan was sent tumbling away into history, he was paradoxically brought right into the present. For here was the book in my hands, a very concrete relic of that vanished age. I couldn't help feeling that it had somehow come to me straight from the ashram of those page 7 days when that historical personage was still there, sitting all but naked on his famous sofa. It was as if, thanks to the vagaries of the postal system, it had taken an entire lifetime and more to complete its long journey from India to England. Now, I was the first person to set eyes on it since the mystery devotee had sealed it in its envelope, and it breathed the atmosphere of the past so strongly that I felt I was almost there. It was as if I had been dreaming a dream of the old hall where Bhagwan had given me his biography to read, and I had awoken to find I was still holding the dream book in my hands. To be continued.